spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Big Road, was written by Virginia Mazur and is presented in observance of Brotherhood Week.
I'm a-goin' down the road feeling bad, I'm a-goin' down the road feeling bad. I'm a-goin' down the road feeling bad, Lordy Lord, I ain't gonna be treated this way.
He walked the big road most of his life, alone. He was alone, but never lonely. He walked it for every man he ever knew, and those he didn't know. He walked it for the dead who had gone before him, the living, and those that are to come. He was born in slavery times, born in a log cabin on the Carver plantation at Diamond Grove, Missouri. The Carvers owned just one slave, Mary. That was his mother. His father was dead. One night, when he was a tiny, squalling baby, Master Moses Carver came to their cabin.
I'm afraid I've got bad news for you, Mary.
What's that, Master Carver?
Slave snatchers rode over the river last night. They raided Colonel Gibson's plantation.
Slave snatchers? Why, they're bad people. They steal colored folks and ship them down the river to New Orleans. Put them in chains, rip them, treat them real bad. Master Carver, these slave snatchers, they ain't coming here.
But it doesn't seem likely, Mary. You're the only one we've got. It doesn't seem worth the risk.
Well, you're forgetting my baby. You're forgetting baby George. He makes two of us.
Well, I don't think you need to worry. Still, I want you to bolt your cabin door tonight and bolt it good.
That same night, about midnight.
Mary! Mary, get up, Mary! The slave snatchers, they've come. Run for the woods. Take the baby. Run, Mary! Run!
Moses. Do you think there's any chance of getting Mary and her baby back?
I've done what I could. I sent Bentley to Kansas to see if he could find her. I told him I'd give him 10 acres and a horse if he brought her back.
Somebody's coming now. Maybe it's him.
Whoa, then.
Yes, it's him, all right.
Oh, Moses. He didn't find her. He's by himself.
Well, I never did have much hope. I sent him just to ease my mind.
Mr. Carver?
Well, Bentley?
Couldn't find hair nor hide of her, Mr. Carver. Guess they must have sold her before I got there. But they left this on the riverbank.
What? Why, it's Mary's baby. It's little George. Oh, give him to me.
Ain't much life left in him. But I thought you'd want him, seeing you were so fond of Mary.
Of course I want him. Oh, poor little birdie. He's half starved to death. I'm going to heat up some milk for him.
Well, Bentley, I told you I'd give you 10 acres and a horse if you brought Mary back. Seeing it's just the baby, what about settling for the horse?
Suits me fine, but looks like you're getting the worst of the bargain. Good horse, worth a lot of money. That little boy, he don't look like he's worth much of anything to me.
Don't you say that, Mr. Bentley. Nobody knows what a baby is worth.
No. Nobody knows what a baby is worth. But maybe Mrs. Carver knew a little. Even after Mr. Lincoln freed all the slaves, she kept little George and raised him like her own. At 10, he was a skinny little boy with legs like toothpicks. The biggest thing about him was his eyes, big and round as saucers, wide open, taking in everything about him, pestering people with questions about what he saw.
What's that, Mr. Carver? What kind of bird make that noise?
That's a whippoorwill, George.
Whippoorwill? Look a here, Mr. Carver. Look what I found.
Why, that's a jack in the pulpit, George.
Mr. Carver, tell me something. Why are some flowers pink and some white and some yellow? Why aren't they all the same color?
Well, I don't know, George. I guess the Lord made him that way so folks wouldn't get tired of looking at the same color all the time.
Is that why he made people different colors, too?
He made a little garden back of the Carver's house where he planted all the wild things he brought from the woods.
This here is a Solomon seal. This is a tansy. This is a foxglove. Well, what's the name of this one, Mrs. Carver?
Why, I don't think I know, George. I don't think I ever saw one like it before. Where'd you find it?
Way off in the woods where ain't nobody ever been but me. I have to know what the name of it is. Where can I find out?
Why, I suppose it's written down in a book somewhere.
But I can't read a book. I want to go to school, Mrs. Carver. I have to go.
Oh, George. George, I've been afraid of this.
What's the matter? What did I do?
Ever since you were a tiny little baby, I've been afraid. Seems like I always knew you were different. I've tried to keep you close by me. I didn't want you to get into any trouble.
Mrs. Carver, why are you talking so sad-like? I just said I want to go to school.
George, I'll teach you your letters. I'll try to teach you how to read.
Thank you, ma'am. But please, ma'am, I'd rather go to school.
Well, boy, what is it? What do you want? Oh, speak, boy. You tongue-tied?
Me, sir? I just...
You live up at Mr. Carver's place, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, what do you want? Did he send you with a message?
No, sir. He didn't send me. I just came. I want to go to school.
You want to go to school? What school?
This here one.
Oh, but you can't go here. You know that. Well, this school is for white boys.
Mr. Mose Carver. He told me colored folks were free. Like everybody else. I want to go to school.
Well, I believe you do. But, well, it's against the rule. Now, I didn't make it, but it's against the rule. Now, I'll tell you what. There's a school for colored boys in Neosho. But it's 10 miles from here.
I could walk.
Walk? 20 miles a day?
I want to go to school bad.
That afternoon, he told Mrs. Carver about it. She was ironing. He was churning.
But, George, you can't go to Neosho to school. It's too far for you to walk there and back.
Then I guess I'll have to go and live at Neosho.
Live? You mean you want to leave us, George?
I don't want to, but I have to. Can I?
You're free, George. Free to do whatever you please.
I want to learn to read and write. I want to learn the name of every flower there is. I want to know what's in a teeny little seed that makes it turn into an ear of corn.
I'm a-gone down the road, feeling bad, feeling bad. I'm a-gone down the road, feeling bad. I'm a-gone down the road, feeling bad. Lordy, Lord, I ain't gonna be treated this way.
He was 10 years old, and he'd never been more than a few miles from home in his life. Now he was going all the way to Neosho on the big road alone, a skinny little boy in a suit cut down from one of Mr. Moe's carvers. It was autumn, and the apple trees were full of big red apples. They looked mighty good to him. But he wouldn't have taken one. Not for anything.
What are you doing, boy? Fixing to steal my apples, I'll bet.
No, sir. I wouldn't steal. The Bible says it's wrong. Miss Carver read it to me.
Bible or no Bible? I never saw a Negro yet that wouldn't steal. Now get along with you. Go on, get along down the road.
I'm going down the road, feeling bad, feeling bad. I'm going down the road, feeling bad.
He walked on, his heart as heavy as a stone. The tears he checked back were as bitter as wormwood. A crow flew out of the big pine tree at the foot of the hill, hightailing it across the sky.
Hi there, old man crow. You black too. But nobody mind about you.
It was black dark when he got to Neosho. Not a soul staring, everybody gone to bed. He picked out the shabbiest, tumble-down house he could find, and he knocked on the door, just a little knock.
Who's that? Who's that knocking on my door? Nobody but me.
What you want?
Do you need a man to work for you?
Well, what man? Where's he at?
Hear me.
Lord, child, you ain't no man.
I can cook and iron and churn and sweep and make a garden. I don't eat much, not as much as a sparrow.
Well, come on in, boy. I'll find something for you to do. And I want you to eat. Eat plenty.
Thank you, ma'am.
Where you come from, honey? And what you doing down here in the ocean all by yourself?
I walked from Mr. Carver's place up at Diamond Grove. I heard the guy at school here where colored boys can go.
Well, that's right. They started it up a while back.
I want to learn to read. And write and everything.
Oh, you're sleepy. I bet you will learn, too. There's not much meat on you, but you're sharp as a briar. Have you had your supper?
No, ma'am.
Well, I must have known you was coming. I got some sweet potatoes right here, keeping warm on the coals. You like sweet potatoes?
Yes, ma'am.
Folks these days get mighty proud buying store-bought food, but don't never look down on the sweet potato.
No, ma'am, I won't.
Now, what did you tell me your name was?
George. George Carver. George Washington Carver.
Now, that's a mighty big name for such a little boy.
I'll grow bigger.
All alone, George had come to Neosho, a skinny little boy. And now, 3 years later, he was shooting up like a Jimson weed, and he learned all they could teach him in the little one-room schoolhouse. One day, he said goodbye to Neosho and started walking again. He walked all over Kansas, Missouri, Iowa. Way down into New Mexico, he walked those next few years. Wherever he'd find a school that would take Negro boys, he'd stop at that town. He'd do washing and ironing for white people to earn a living. He was almost 21 now. He'd walked hundreds of miles and been to dozens of different schools. He'd finished high school, but that wasn't enough for him.
College? Well, that's a pretty expensive proposition, George.
I know, sir.
There's this school over in Iowa I've heard about. They take a few students free. But your marks have to be pretty high. I can give you the address.
I'll write tonight. I'll write.
He wrote the letter over and over again until it was perfect. Then he lay awake every night until the answer came. It was on fine engraved stationery from the president of the college himself. He said George could come and talk to him. So he bought himself a pair of brand new $2 shoes and he started walking. He walked for 2 days to get there. Then he knocked on the president's door.
Come in. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Well, what is it? What can I do for you?
I'm George Washington Carver, sir. I've come to talk to you about entering college.
Entering college? Here? Oh, well, that's impossible.
But you wrote me, sir. I have your letter. Here it is.
Hmm. Oh, I see. I'm sorry there's been a mistake.
Is it my marks, sir? They weren't high enough after all?
No, your marks, they're satisfactory. As a matter of fact, they're outstanding. I don't know how you've done it.
Then, what is it, sir?
Well, we have a rule. We don't take Negroes here.
I see.
I'm sorry, I didn't make the rule. I don't know what harm it would be. One Negro student in a college of 300. You seem a quiet, well-mannered person. You know your place, don't you?
Oh, sir, I'm afraid I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any place for me.
Well, it's too bad. I'd like to give you a chance, but a rule is a rule. Can't go against precedent.
The door shut in his face. He walked through the big iron gates of the college down the dusty road. He was ready to give up college, give up everything. It was too hard when you were a Negro. He walked a long time, the hot sun beating down on his head. When he couldn't walk anymore, he lay down under a tree and pressed his face against the cool grass. It was then that a verse from the Bible popped into his head.
The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein.
The words were like a hand reaching out to him. He sat up.
It's not just their world. It's mine, too. Somewhere, somehow, I'm going to find my place in it.
He was 27 years old, and he must have washed and ironed 1,000 dresses and 1,000 shirts before he had the money to enter college. But he entered.
We're happy to accept you at Simpson College, Carver. You are our first Negro student.
I hope I won't be the last, sir.
Still washing and ironing, he worked his way through Simpson College in Iowa. While he was there, he discovered something important about himself. It was in the drawing class.
This morning I found some drawing in the wastebasket. Drawings of wildflowers and ferns. They were all crumpled up. I wonder who did them. Well, won't anybody admit to it? Yes, Carver?
I did them. Are they so awfully bad?
Bad? Why, no, they're good. They're very, very good. They have a quality I can't quite define. They're accurate to the tiniest detail, and yet they have a kind of poetry to them, too. I'd like to talk to you about them, George.
An artist. A great artist. That's where the road led to. He'd even go to Europe and study. That's where he'd find his place. And then, one day something happened that changed his mind. A boy came up to him on the street.
Please, mister, give me a nickel.
A nickel? I guess I can spare a nickel. But what do you need it for?
I'm hungry.
He gave the kid the nickel and walked away. He walked away thinking.
Hungry children. Hungry men and women. How many have I seen in my life? A whole world could be made to feed them. I don't want to draw pictures of plants. I want to grow them.
Slowly, the vision of Europe faded. Instead, he went to Iowa State College to study farming. The day he graduated, the president called him into his study.
Sit down, Mr. Carver. I want to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
You've been with us for 4 years. Now you're ready to leave us. I've decided not to let you.
I don't understand.
We want you to stay on here at Iowa State and teach.
Teach? Me? Teach here? You want me to teach college? To be a college professor?
That's right, George. You're a born teacher. You've got not only knowledge, but a feeling for what you know. What do you say about it? I can't offer you a very big salary at first, but... what do you say? Well, George, what do you say?
I'm sorry, sir. I was thinking about my mother. She was a slave. When she was 13 years old, she was sold for $500. I hope she knows about me.
He was teaching there at Iowa State when a man way down in Alabama heard about him. His name was Booker T. Washington, and he had been a slave, too, like George's mother. Now he was head of a new college for Negroes, Tuskegee Institute, that had been started by church people after the Civil War. He wanted George to come to Tuskegee and teach farming. George went to the president of Iowa State.
I hate to leave you, sir. It's more like home than any place I've been since I left Diamond Grove.
But you are thinking about accepting Mr. Washington's offer.
I'm not thinking about it. I know. I have to go to Tuskegee.
It's quite an honor. I don't want to stand in your way. I suppose Mr. Washington's offering you more money than you get here?
No, sir, less. About half as much.
Then why? Why on earth...
I don't want money, sir. I want to help people. Not just my people. People everywhere.
At Tuskegee, Carver taught young Negro boys new ways of farming. He found 108 ways of using sweet potatoes. 300 ways of using peanuts. It was like magic, the things he made out of sweet potatoes and peanuts. He made milk, candy, soap, cold cream, rubbing oil, paint, coffee, shoe polish, linoleum. They began to call him a great scientist. They put a doctor before his name. People came from all over America, from Europe, to talk to him. The president invited him to the White House. And down at Tuskegee, they put up a statue of him. There was a funny thing about George Washington Carver. He never really cared for fame. What he cared about was people.
Come in.
Are you Dr. Carver? Dr. George Washington Carver?
That's right.
Do you mind, sir, if I sit down?
Why, of course not. You sit right here. What's the matter, son? You feel sick?
No, sir, I'm tired. I walked most 200 miles to get to Tuskegee.
200 miles?
I read about you in a newspaper. I wanted to come here and learn from you. Will you help me?
Of course, I'll help you. I'll help you all I can. But mostly, son, mostly you have to do it for yourself. I know.
I'm gone down the road feeling bad, feeling bad. I'm gone down the road feeling bad.
He's dead now. He died in 1943. He was 83 years old. He'd come a long way, a hard way. And he was tired. He'd walked the big road alone. Alone, but never lonely. He walked it for everyone he ever knew and those he didn't know. He walked it for those that had gone before him, for the living, and all of those that were to come. I like to think the way will be a little easier for everybody because of him. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Everett Clinchy, president of the National Conference of Christians and Jews. Dr. Clinchy.
The story of George Washington Carver suggests the question, how many scientists, artists, writers and teachers and other useful leaders has America lost by keeping the Negroes down? This is a pressing question now that we are in competition with communism in scientific attainment and in a rivalry with Moscow in universal education. The United States and the whole free world needs all the talent that we can draw from Protestants, Catholics and Jews and of all the Asian religious cultures. America needs the full opportunities for the sons and daughters of every race and nation to develop their potential capacities to the full. The brotherhood of all mankind under the fatherhood of God has many justifications: the moral law, political democracy, social justice, as well as religious understanding, love, and compassion. But here is another argument for brotherhood among all the members of the family of man. In this space invasion age, we need more brains, more individuals of talent, more help from the George Washington Carvers of every group. This is the big road that we must walk along together. And Brotherhood Week 1958 is a good time to start.
Thank you, Dr. Clinchy. Our eternal light drama today, The Big Road, was written by Virginia Mazza and was presented in observance of Brotherhood Week. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Richard Mims, Bill Williams, William Edmondson, Peggy Allenby, John McGovern, Bill Zuckert, Iva Francis, Jim Bowles, Charles Webster, Hilda Haynes, Alice Yorman, and Mary Lou Forster. The singer was Bob Ross, the narrator, Norman Rose. Now, this is Lionel Rico. Our program is directed by George Voutsas. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.